Hello and welcome to The Tips, a betting preview podcast from the DP World Tour. I'm your host, Ollie Silverton, and as usual, I'm joined by our expert guests as we look ahead to the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth Golf Club and the Fortinet Championship on the PGA Tour. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Yes, we have three esteemed guests this week. We have Ben Coley, the deputy head of content at Sporting Life, Matt Cooper, the head of stories everywhere, pretty much as a freelance golf writer, and Kit Alexander, a broadcaster at Sky Sports. But there is only one place to start because he's still smiling. It's with Ben Coley, who, of course, tipped Vincent Norman, not on the podcast, sadly, but in his column at the Horizon Irish Open. Ben, congrats. How are you feeling?
Thank you. Yeah, still a bit unsure how it happened, to be honest with you. But it had been like since the DP World Tour's come back, I had two of the top six in Northern Ireland, and then had Nikolai in Prague, where, you know, he was favourite going to the final round, and things didn't quite pan out. I had Alex Bjork in Switzerland, who was runner up to Ludwig Åberg. So I'd been hitting the crossbar, and when things are going like that, everyone tells you, oh, don't worry, you know, wind's around the corner. And obviously those of us who have to actually put these things together think the opposite and think we've missed the boat, the opportunity to land a winner is gone, and a bad run of form is around the corner. So while that may still be true, I'm glad to have snuck Vincent Norman in before that happens. But yeah, he's a proper player. He owed me one, Ollie, as you know. He was going to be the headline tip at the Barbasol. I was told he was injured. He won the Barbasol. He beat my 151 tip at the Barbasol. And I think I'm over that now. But it took a special Sunday for that to happen.
Oh, good. I wasn't going to mention that because I knew you're still going to get over it, but that's fine. But it was an interesting win. Like, no one sort of wanted to win it for a while. One of those names is potentially Ryan Fox, who, Matt, he was one of your picks and was right up there.
Yeah, although I was foxed, I suppose you could call it, by Ben's pick. Conclusions like that, in a way, are one of my favorites. You know, somebody posts a number, everyone struggles to match it. There's something quite sort of intriguing and excellent to watch about that kind of conclusion. But it did actually back up just what a tough track the K Club can be, because there was a lot of chitter chatter when the delay happened, the 90-minute delay mid-afternoon, that with the soft course, that the would-be birdies and potentially eagles out there for somebody. And ultimately, it was only Vincent Norman that could mop them up. It became a real challenge for the leaders, as it was indeed over the whole weekend. So a really enjoyable Irish Open, I thought, all round.
Yeah, Kit, what did you make of it as someone who has watched pretty much every event on every tour over the last however many years? What was your take on it?
We have these sort of DP World Tour Sundays, don't we, where everyone has a pop and it's open. And it was almost the antithesis of what I would call a DP World Tour Sunday, because guys were just falling away, including obviously Rory McIlroy. You know, it happens to the best of people. We always say on when this happens that, you know, winning isn't easy. And especially when you've got guys like Hurley Long who are up there and, you know, haven't been in that position too many times, and also playing for his card, and he managed to finish second alone and save his card for next season. But, you know, even someone like Rory McIlroy, who's notched up the wins in the majors and has been world number one and in front of his home crowds cheering him on, it's difficult for him to win as well. And that it demonstrated it. Like the guys have said, you post a number and you think, yeah, well, there's a couple of par fives coming up in the final few holes. Someone will get there, because there were so many in and around with sort of six or seven to go, and it just never quite happened. But I think the key was they weren't drinking the same coffee that Vincent was in the rain delay. When he spoke to Tim Barter on TV, you know, what happened in the rain delay? What'd you do? I just went and had a cup of coffee. I'm a big coffee guy. Then I flushed it. I mean, Vincent, get that coffee machine. Take it home. Take it with you. It worked. Yeah, because like no one else found the birdies that he did. I think it was seven in his last 12. Obviously, a couple of them coming before the delay, I think. But yeah, he came back and dealt with that whole situation the best. And you know, if the Ryder Cup was in 6 months' time, we might be having a conversation of, well, would Vincent Norman be a great Swedish partner for Ludwig Åberg? And I think probably in the future, that's a conversation we will definitely be having.
There's a fair bit of golf to go before then. There might be some more storylines like Mr. Norman, as mentioned. But one of the events that is happening for is, of course, the flagship event on the tour, the BMW PGA Championship from Wentworth. Yeah, that's right. We are at the West Course this week. Famously went under some big renovations by Ernie Els in 2009. It has had so many iconic moments. In recent years, we've had Billy Horschel and Shane Lowry winning it. And they did it by just hitting every green in regulation, it seemed, by which we might speak to the guys later if that's something they're looking at. All 12 Ryder Cup players on the European side are there. They're finally there after a couple of days at Marco Simone, getting some practicing. Kit, I've mentioned how iconic Wentworth is. If you can narrow it down, some of the fondest memories here over the years, what stands out for you?
Oh, there's many. I mean, I've been fortunate to have been to most of them over the last 15 years or so. I mean, I think Luke Donald winning to reach world number one for European golf, for British golf, the way in which he did it, winning the DP World Tour's flagship event, I think is something that I always remember and think of when I think of Wentworth. And away from just winning it, Robert Carlsen in 2010, when he thought he'd missed the cut, flew home to Monaco and then had to turn around and come back again. He was going to get on the exact same flight to fly back, but that got cancelled, had to go via Paris, got 2 or 3 hours sleep, private plane, picked up at Farnborough Airport, and then goes and shoots a 62, a course record at the time, to get himself back into contention, having had no sleep and gone home to Monte Carlo for half an hour and then come back again. Things like that just always amuse me. But yeah, it's a great tournament and we're fortunate that we get great fields. And I'm absolutely buzzing that all 12 Ryder Cup players are here. Plus you've got some other big names as well. Of course, Billy Horschel from the American side of things. Guys like Minwoo Lee and Ryan Fox from New Zealand and Australia, obviously. It's a great field. The strongest I can remember in a long time, actually, at Wentworth. And I just think it's going to be a brilliant tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, Ollie, about how Ernie Els was responsible for a renovation of the course. It struck me this week that's been a real, you know, from about 10 years ago until about 5 years ago, it was non-stop chatter about the course, whether it was like Ian Poulter and Padraig Harrington used to grumble about the greens, then that first renovation is not very good. Then we had another renovation after Ernie Els's that was with European Golf Design, who is from just around the corner at Sunningdale. And that's kind of completely changed things. You know, nobody actually grumbles about the idea of coming here, and that really helps the field. I think that explains it. I don't think it's completely gone away from that one renovation, though, because I always think that the 17th, if those of us who've got great memories of Wentworth, the 17th, you know, you've still got the reverse camber on the tee shot, you've still got the blind shot over the dog leg to the approach, but then you get to the green and you're sort of like, it's like looking at a sort of aging Hollywood superstar. You sort of know what you're looking at, but somehow it looks a little bit different. You know, bits are stretched and bumps are in there that, you know, and you sort of, is that, or I better not name any names in Hollywood, but, you know, it's a facelift that's slightly gone awry, but the course itself still retains those great memories. And I think there's a real connection with the 1980s. It was 84 when Wentworth settled at the PGA Championship settled at Wentworth, and since then there's been, like, not just fans love the fact that they've got all those deep memories. So many of the players say that they walked the fairways trying to pester the players for balls and autographs. And even you get, like, Matteo Manassero said he watched loads of videos of Seve. Francesco Molinari, when he won, said he remembered running home from school to watch Costantino Rocca win on a Monday afternoon. And he's like, why did he do that on a Monday afternoon? It's because, bizarrely, we Europe was kept to the British bank holiday schedule. Sort of bizarre things that went on there. Those memories are real. And Billy Horschel, of course, he was fueled by television coverage of Wentworth. So there's a real connection with the past here, I think.
Yeah, just going back to what you said about the course, yeah, when it was softened, I think 2016 was when Els and European Golf Design softened a lot of the green complexes, which were where a lot of the issues were. And I think the move in date in the schedule has made a big difference as well, because it changed date in 2019 from May to when we have it now, sort of around September. And Wentworth greens were never at their best in May. It was very early in the season. They were sort of Poa, bent grass, sort of combination-y greens that would get a bit bumpy at the best of times. With the change in course, they changed the grasses. It's pure bent grass, I think, now. and then you're getting Wentworth at pretty much its best at this time of year, or very close to it at least. It's great that there are fewer murmurs or grumbles, if you like, about the course and its presentation, because sometimes you can only do what the British weather allows you to do. And when it's in mid-May, it's a bit of an upwards battle. But I think this time and place in the schedule, I think, is fantastic. And we're seeing that with a few Americans starting to come over. And I think with the change to the schedule globally now, we're going to see it more with this FedEx Cup fall coming in. And most of the top 50 guys from the FedEx Cup the previous year, who are the top in the world, not going to be teeing up hugely in those fall events. I think we're going to see even more Americans potentially come and play events like the BMW PGA Championship moving forwards. And we may even see a situation a bit like the Scottish Open, maybe, where there's some sort of co-sanction of the event. I don't know. I'm just putting that out there, but it might be a way to attract more Americans like Billy Horschel.
Yeah, it would be amazing if we get more over there. But even without them, what a field it is if we have a quick look at the top of the market. The first time in a while, I think it's Hovland, McIlroy and Rahm, basically all 7-1. You can still get 8 somewhere for John Rahm. And then Tommy Fleetwood just behind him with Fitzpatrick at 16s. Onto Shane Lowry at 20-1, who's alongside Tyrrell Hatton. And of course, Ludvig Åberg, who always seems to have his name read out these days. So let's get into tips, because there's lots of golf. We've got the Fortinet and the PGA Tour back as well. And Ben, we will start with you, with your opening outright selection to who you think will master Wentworth with all these little changes that have gone on.
Yeah, I'll preface it by saying I don't like going win only. I think partly because most people who read my column and listen to podcasts like this, they want to bet each way. It's one of the things that appeals about golf. Obviously, you can back the favorite each way or one of the favorites. You probably want to make it your only bet. But John Rahm's the one for me. I appreciate he doesn't have the recent form of Victor Hovland. I don't think that's a bad thing, though, at this time of year. Counterintuitive though that may sound, I think, you know, for Hovland to go and win the FedEx Cup, I know he's got the Ryder Cup to keep him focused, but I suspect he gave himself a bit of time off. And it's always difficult to know how players will respond to that. You know, he's earned a heck of a lot of money in a very short space of time, and has sort of become the fourth member of the very elite in golf. And I suspect he'll take it in his stride in the long run, but in the short term, I wouldn't have him ahead of John Rahm in the betting, let's put it that way. McIlroy wasn't at his best last week. I think we heard that said throughout commentary, that he really was fighting to give himself a chance to win, and he did so, but then swing problems, whatever you want to say, he wasn't hitting the ball as well, and that finally caught him out. So we come to John Rahm. He's not been driving the ball very well. But actually, that's kind of been the case ahead of his previous two starts at this golf course. On both occasions, he finished mid-pack in the proper scoring at Eastlake, the stroke play scoring. Had a couple of weeks off and came to Wentworth and finished second in both of them. He was the halfway leader the first time. And then last year, of course, stormed through the field to be beaten by one. I think he came home in 28. It may have been 29. It's a phenomenal course record, obviously. But I think most of all, it tells us just how dangerous John Rahm is at DP World Tour level. And the stat that I think really sums up for me why I find him very, very hard to leave out at 8-1, which, remember, is the sort of price he went off for the Masters, a little bit bigger for the Masters, but US Open, PGA Championship, he's about an 8, 9, 10-1 chance. We're getting 8-1 here without Scheffler and all the best of the Americans. He's won 8 of his 23 DP World Tour regular tournaments. It's a phenomenal strike rate. And there is a caveat. 3 of them are the Open de España, where he doesn't have to beat Rory McIlroy and Victor Hovland, obviously. But the others, 2 Irish Opens, really high-class fields, 3 DP World Tour Championships with comparable field strength to this. I just think he wins this more often than those odds say. And I think sort of talk of his demise is a bit overplayed. I just think he had a quiet playoffs. And in some ways, I think that will focus him. This is his one chance to get his game back before the Ryder Cup, where he's obviously Europe's key man, or one of the 3 key men. And I think he can show it, yeah.
Okay, great. So from the top 3, we've got him. And then you look on the exchange, there could be a little bit more value there for John Rahm as well. But his opening bet is the Spaniard with 2 runner-up finishes here. Matt, are you taking one of the other big names, or are you going a bit further down the list?
No, I'm not. Very persuasive from Ben, though. I found it very, very difficult to split the top 3. And maybe I should have waited a little while and listened to Ben's advocacy. That was very, very excellent stuff. I did have a little giggle, actually, that when I thought for 1 minute Ben was going to suggest that Victor was number four of the Fab Four. And instantly in my head, I had him as Ringo Starr. And it kind of works. If they were the Fab Four, he would be Ringo Starr. My first pick actually shuffles down the pack a little bit, because there's the likes of Tyrrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood and Matt Fitzpatrick that come after that top trio. And I've actually gone for Tom Kim, and flying in the face of my own theories in one sense, because I think this tends to be an event where people, they've shown very good course form before they've actually won here. I think the last sort of 18 winners here had a top 10, and they'd actually contended mostly, with the exception of one man, and that was Ben Ann. And so there's a little bit of a link there with Tom Kim. Tom might look at Ben and know that he won as a rookie and know if my countrymen can do it, I can do it. I think Tom Kim's a very good player, and he can sometimes get foxed by a lack of length from the tee, but I don't think that'll be the case this week. I think he's more likely to just be attracted by the fact that this is a golf course where you can hit fairways first of all, which he's well capable of doing, and then shaping shots into the greens. And I think it'll play to the fact that he quite likes that sort of creativity element. I think he's in really, really good form. Eighth at the US Open, sixth at the Scottish Open, second at the Open. Had a good playoffs without quite firing. I think coming over here, I think he'll enjoy it. He also had a little look at Wentworth ahead of the Open. He had a little trip to London and headed over to Wentworth, played the course. And that kind of confirmed in his head that he liked the place and wanted to return for this tournament. And that was kind of like the little clincher for me. And I thought that the initial prices I thought were very good. And I think, Ollie, I'm right in saying he's still around about 28. I got a little bit higher than that, but that's enough for me to go with Tom Kim each way.
He's got sneaky good form in the UK as well. You mentioned a couple of the results there at the Scottish, which he's performed well last year as well as this year, was right up there in the Open. And I quite like him if the wind gets up, because you don't need a lot of wind around the West Course at Wentworth for it to make a big difference. And especially with it being so tree-lined, you suddenly get your ball above there. All you need is a sort of 10, 12, 14 mile an hour breeze, and it can fox people, because it is a difficult course to scramble around, actually, and you might touch upon it later, but good scramblers generally do well there, or you need to scramble well to get a good result. So I like Tom Kim, and especially if we get a bit of breeze through the week, which there's the potential for. Obviously, it's been very hot over in the UK for the last week to 10 days, unbelievably. That weather has now just broken, and as the sort of more stormier traditional autumn weather comes in, it might bring a little bit of breeze as you see the pressures changing. So I like that, especially if we do get a little bit of breeze, because I think he's an underrated wind player from what we've seen in his career so far.
Yeah, and we also saw with Tom Kim, the President's Cup, a lively character, and there's a lot of amazing crowds at Wentworth. Some may not know him too well, and he will love if people start getting behind him, egging them on, and everything like that. I think he'll really thrive in that environment. Yes, Matt?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's another fascinating aspect, actually, of the evolution of Wentworth. I mean, in the last sort of 5 to 6 years, it's become like a real festival, and there's plenty of fans, as you say, that Tom can react with, and they're very close on the first tee. And then as you wander off onto the course, there's a real interaction between fans and players. And I think you're bang on, Ollie. It's the sort of thing that fuels him completely. We've seen him in the President's Cup, that he loves feeding off the galleries.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be him and Jax Jones, I think it is, on stage, clearly on the Sunday, whenever it is parting. I can see him leading a DJ set, trophy in hand. Okay, so yeah, we're still 25s for Tom Kim available there. And Ben, you've got another second outright pick here with an Englishman taking us away.
Yeah, fairly boring for me this week. I've got a couple of really big prices that I can mention later on. But in terms of the headline selection, I mean, look, you've got all 12 members of the Ryder Cup team. You've got, as Kit said earlier, some members of the President's Cup team, Billy Horschel as well. It's a very, very good field. And I do think the winner, obviously, it sounds, will come from somewhere near the top of the betting. And it might just be Matt Fitzpatrick. I do think this event means that a little bit more to the English player. It's been a fabulous record for the best and some of those lower down the tree, if you like, over the years. And really, when you think about all the best English players, they've either won this or had a good look at winning it. Obviously, Lee Westwood came very close in both the years. Donald pipped him, I believe. Justin Rose has come very close again, just done by Donald. And if you go back, obviously, Nick Faldo, all-time winner here. Fitzpatrick's played it 7 times already, which seems remarkable. But for me, this is the best form he's arrived in. And that seems a strange thing to be saying, because I think we only have to go back a month and we'd have all been questioning. You know, I actually drafted a piece on whether we need to be worried about him ahead of the Ryder Cup. And that very week, he went and finished second to Hovland in the BMW Championship. So that piece will never see the internet. But he could have won 2 of his last 3 starts. You know, he's very unlucky to bump into one of the best rounds of the year from Victor Hovland. He hung tough that day. And then obviously, Ludvig Åberg was brilliant in Switzerland, but, you know, Fitzpatrick's bogeyed 3 of the last 4 holes, which is, you know, it's a bit of a concern. It will frustrate the hell out of him, I'm sure. But ultimately, it was one chip shot on the second of the par fives that, had it gone to plan, I think he'd have won the tournament. So he really does look to be back at the top of his game. And that's backed up in the stats, because his driving had become a real problem. If you look in the Open, I think he was one of the very worst drivers in the field. Every start since, it's got better. And it was very, very good in Switzerland. Even allowing for the fact that obviously he's a 2-time winner up in the mountains, he obviously loves it there. I think the signs are that he's got his game right back on track. And in terms of, obviously, all the Europeans want to be ready for the Ryder Cup, but this is someone who's gone 0 for 5 so far. So maybe just a little extra determination to be a key part of the team, as he should be as a major champion. But yeah, as I said, I think this is the best form at which he has arrived at Wentworth. He's been halfway leader before. He has a couple of top tens. He's never missed the cut. He's a shot shaper. He's got all, you know, all the ball flight and the moving it around the trees. He's happy clubbing down off the tee. I think it's a very, very good course for him. And as I said, I think he arrives in much better form than he has in the past. I would make him the clear danger to the big three ahead of Tommy. And for that reason, he was my second selection.
I like that Fitzy pick. And it's interesting you mentioned the issues he had with driving, because he was talking about it a few weeks ago. And he said he actually has a slightly different driver swing to iron swing, which is something that wouldn't necessarily be taught to amateurs, for example. But I get it. And the thing he found with his driving was that his iron swing had kind of seeped into his driving a little bit. And there wasn't as much difference in the two swings. I mean, it's a relatively subtle difference anyway. But he was swinging his driver like he was swinging his irons, basically, and it was costing him. And he's now managed to sort of separate, refocus. He's got those two, obviously very well related, but separate swings. And like you say, he's playing great. He's coming in hot. And as most of the European Ryder Cup team are, actually, which is very nice to see, most of them finding form. Anyone that we were question marks over, like Fitzy and Shane, seems to be coming back into form, and everyone else is playing great. So lovely.
Yeah, I'll go my second pick now. There's a bit of a link here with Matt Fitzpatrick being very good at Crown, and my second pick. He's a much bigger price, but he's a past winner at Crown, and that's Tristan Lawrence. And I've had a lot of success with Tristan Lawrence over the last 2 years. I picked him at Crown when he won at 40-1, and then he won at 100-1 at Eichenrieder in Munich. And I've been very fortunate, and I've spotted that he's just a very good player at altitude. I've also been slightly unfortunate in that I also tipped him in Albatross and Crown this year, and he didn't do so well. But he actually did bounce back, was third last week in the Irish Open, and that's put him back into my sort of spotlight. And I think, other than altitude, if he's ever going to play well anywhere else, it's going to be when he's within the trees. That win at Eichenrieder, he won at Rampark, really makes me think that he's a good player. And he didn't do so well on debut here, a couple of 74s to miss the cut, but I think he's got a lot of game in him. And most of all, I really liked the price. He was close to 200 initially. I think 175 is where he peaked. He's dipped down, so I think somebody somewhere has tipped him. We can get 125s, I think, now, Ollie. But also, if you just look at his record in the last 2 years, he's got 4 wins in 48 starts. That's just nuts. I mean, the big question mark against that is mostly it's been against fields not as good as this one. But I think he has the capacity to actually step up, as he kind of revealed last week at the Irish Open. And I'm quite happy to sort of snap it up while the opportunity is there to get him at a big price.
Yeah,
He's one of those things. I can see why you've cottoned on to him, Matt, because I really like the sort of butterfly effect of Thurston Lawrence's career, because in Joburg, when he won his first DP World Tour event, it was abandoned, wasn't it? Sort of after they played a few holes around three. And I think probably, look, we'll never know. I think probably Xander Lombard might have beaten him that day. And you look at their respective careers since, like Xander's rock solid pro, he's got loads of ability and I'm sure it'll happen for him one day. But Thurston Lawrence has taken that and become the player he was always meant to be. He's a fantastic amateur, but he was just sort of plodding along a little bit. And then he's taken advantage of this curious set of circumstances and then just used it as a springboard, which is really admirable. But you wonder, had there been 36 more holes in Joburg, his entire career could have a very different look. Mm. And Matt's tipping record as well.
And potentially yours, Ben, if we go back to the preview, was Lombard featured? We'll never know. It could be one of the articles that also goes missing. Yeah, absolutely was. Well, quite an international flavour there with the first four outrights. We've got Spaniard and South Korean, Englishman and South African. We are now going to open it up. You get three more sort of bonus picks, finish off those fancy teams. You know, it's a big, impressive field. So, Ben, who are you offering up here?
First, I did have a really close look at the sort of Ryder Cup nearly men. I like the motivational aspect. I think if you go back to last year, Mackenzie Hughes won the Sanderson Farms and said afterwards he was really motivated by being left out of the President's Cup side. I think Lucas Herbert played really well in the weeks after that as well, when he'd been overlooked. And I do think it's Ryan Fox as well, winning the Dunhill Links not that long after the President's Cup itself. So I do think it's an interesting factor. My worry with some of them, like a Yannick Paul, Adrian Meronk, is fatigue. You know, they sort of all came back, played those two or three high-intensity tournaments. A lot of them went then to Ireland for the Irish Open. And you just worry if it might have left a bit of a mark. But Victor Perez had to withdraw in Northern Ireland, first of all, because he got COVID, and then he didn't play the Irish Open. And I know he probably wasn't that high on anyone's Ryder Cup radar in the end. He certainly is a name who over the last 2 years has been right in the mix and in the qualification places for a good time as well, which is very much what happened in the previous Ryder Cup. Anyway, he's a former Wentworth runner-up. I don't think his game's far away. I think if he'd hold some more putts in the Czech Republic a couple of weeks ago, he'd have been right there on Sunday. He missed the cut at Kran, but he's played there four times. He's finished a best of 50-something and missed three cuts. So he simply doesn't play well in the Alps, whatever reason. And we do know he can play around Wentworth. So as someone who's won three times since 2019 and always against high-quality opposition or in big-money events, I liked his price at about 80-1. And the last two have a different kind of Ryder Cup flavour, I suppose, in that they are both Italian. One of them, vice-captain Francesco Molinari. Now, it's very obvious to say Francesco Molinari around Wentworth, where he's got pretty much the best record of anybody in this field. A former champion with, I think, six of the top tens in his last 10 appearances. He was ninth last year, didn't really make a putt. That was his first start since the Open 2 months previously. Obviously, his form this year, probably not as good as that. I think he'd been 15th at St Andrews. But he did play well in the Czech Masters. Mid-pack, 267s around the middle of the tournament. Didn't putt particularly well, but his irons were as good as they've been since Abu Dhabi when he was in contention. I think he's not that far away. And I could see him going well. And finally, Guido Migliosi. I won't be alone, but I like cottoning on to players who've been catching the eye. I think he shot 63 and 61 in Switzerland 2 weeks ago, which is the definition of catching the eye. He was sixth at halfway in Ireland last week as well. And although his Wentworth record doesn't look good, I do think it's a good course for him. He's won a very similar looking one in Belgium. And his ball striking stats from his first few visits were brilliant. He just didn't make many putts. Last year, he made the putts, finished 13th. And I think he could build on that. He certainly looks a player who's close with his title defence coming up next week as well in France.
Yeah, I really like Guido Migliozzi. I think you know, he's one of those players who a lot of people don't expect would thrive between trees, but actually he kind of does. It's almost like it focuses his intensity on what the target is. My other three, a couple would be really good for fantasy teams. Maybe is I like Billy Horschel and the fact that he really does adore Wentworth. I think he also he likes being around London. He likes having West Ham fans cheering him down the fairways, and he played very nicely in the final two events of the PGA Tour season and kind of maintained that to some extent in Ireland last week. I think it was a nice little warm-up for him. It's very easy to doubt Thomas Detry about the Belgium. who sort of gets to the finish line very often and then sort of shies away from actually crossing it before anybody else. He was fifth here last year. And I think there's a similar sort of profile to a couple of people in that they've played well in America, but just not eye-catching top tens. And I think actually that form's a little bit better than it appears. And then the one I really like is Shubhanka Sharma, who I actually bumped into him on the Monday after the Open. We were both buying coffee in Hoy Lake Station, and I said, "Congratulations, Shubhanka, for your eighth." And he was quite effusive about just what a great week he'd had, and a really really nice fellow. I actually thought he'd do quite well in Cran, and he didn't. But then he was impressive when seventh in the Irish Open last week, and he was third after 54 holes on debut at Wentworth in 2019 before falling back, and he was ninth last year. I think he's got a bit of... He's another one who likes playing within the trees. He almost won the WGC Mexico Championship at Chapultepec a few years ago when absolutely flying at one point. He won at Rand Park. He also won at Sojana, which is a little bit tight. So I think he's kind of a good fit for here. He's in really, really good form, up against some good class of company, and was an enormous prize to begin with. He was over 200s to begin with, and still can get a decent price.
I like the Migliozzi shout. I think he's a player that he blows so hot and cold, but when he's hot, he looks like an absolute world beater. And he does like the tree line course. He's an unbelievable sort of driving iron, long iron player. He's got that tee shot where he hits a driving iron off of a tee about 2 or 3 inches off the ground and almost hits it down before it comes up again. I think, like you say, you don't necessarily think he'll suit that, but he can find the fairways. And I think when he got his first event in Kenya, that was a very tight tree line course as well. So that does seem to bring the best out of him. And he is certainly on his way back to form, it looks like. And when he gets hot, he gets hot, and the title defence next week, where incidentally he hit the best shot of the season last year into 18 at Paris National, Golf National, to win it. It was sensational. I wanted to mention a couple of Scottish guys whose names I thought might come up from you guys, but haven't. And I just want to get your takes on them. So first one being Conor Syme, coming in off the back of 3 top 10s, playing nicely. British players, obviously English and Scottish players, have got a great record at Wentworth. Can he do it now that the big boys of all the Ryder Cup players are in town? Obviously, there were a few last week in Ireland. Do you think he can contend? And Bob McIntyre, because he doesn't have a great record at Wentworth. But I think you're looking at the guys in that 12 Europeans who've been away this week. And for most of them, it's, I don't want to say normal, but you look at the top of the market, these are guys that are used to being in Ryder Cup teams, used to playing. For McIntyre, he made such a big thing of qualifying for the Ryder Cup. I think the fact he's actually there and the fact he will have just spent a day or two in and amongst these guys in Rome in the last couple of days could actually just really inspire him. And he's the type of personality and character that he could feed off that and just find something this week. And I don't. Do you guys agree? Do you think A, can Syme get up there? And B, do you think McIntyre can kind of be inspired by actually being in this Ryder Cup immediately?
I tipped Bob for this last year, and he won in Italy the week after, which was nice. He's done that to me twice now. I did go back and forth with him. He's the biggest price of the European Ryder Cup players. And there has been a lot of talk, you know, certainly on the American side, I think that he's the sort of lucky one, which I sort of... He qualified, so I think it's sort of you shouldn't really consider the six lucky because they qualified. I don't think you're lucky to qualify, and obviously he'd have qualified a good deal easier if Rory McIlroy didn't finish 3-3 in Scotland. So I'm a huge fan, and he's a big game player. He's not done it at Wentworth yet. I had a bit of a worry. The more I looked, the less compelled I was by the idea that he could do it around here. He's very aggressive, and I think sometimes pragmatism wins at Wentworth. Conor Syme, when I think of him, I think of Celtic Manor, Diamond Country Club in Austria, last week at the K Club, obviously Cron as well. Tree line courses, definitely. You know, sometimes we just leap to thinking Scotsman must play better by the sea. I think he's one who plays better within the trees. So yeah, no reason he can't continue to play well.
I'm quite interested in what Ben just said there about about Robert being an aggressive player. Remind me a little bit of I used to ghost write Chris Wood's Sky Sports column, and did so the year that he didn't win Wentworth. When he actually said to me, he said, we were chatting about it the week after. It was a slightly difficult conversation to have with a fella who was leading the tournament after 54 holes and have to explain why he didn't win it. But he gave a really fascinating explanation because he said he played so well in the first three rounds that in the final round, he felt almost he could do whatever he liked, and he started taking lines into greens that were just a little bit too aggressive. And I think one example was the first par five, where he said the obvious play was to play the middle of the green, let the ball feed towards the hole, and he just kind of felt invincible and just went straight at the pin, didn't make his birdie, and started to struggle a little bit after that. Interestingly about that is that he learned his lesson, and a few years later he actually won. But it shows you the difficulty in this game, that if you do start going for pins, it can catch you out, and Wentworth is definitely a course that does that.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to add what Chris Wood's ghostwriting to Matt Cooper's unbelievable amount of lies he has on the Matt Cooper podcast coming to you when we find a sponsor. Yeah, I think you're right. And the Guido thing was fascinating. Kit, you took my bet of the week, which I think will be about 10 to 1 on, which was we will see a slow-mo stinger from a high tee into the tree on one social channel somewhere. But plenty of
also 17, check out the low shot of the hooking shot off of the camber ball below feet around 17. People trying to chase it in there. Shane Lowry's always got one of them in the locker every year at Wentworth.
Yeah, and we're going for a driver off deck on 18 as well at some point somewhere. no doubt. But plenty of names there. We'll go over them all in the recap. But first, we've got to get to the Fortinet Championship. Before that, we've got a quick game of Who Am I? Yes, we are back with Who Am I? We've got some serious players. We've got Ben Curley, used to hate it. Then he got it second or first guest last time, and he now loves it. We've got Kit Harrington, who knows everything about every golfer ever, even if they don't know it. And we've got Matt Cooper, who...
Did I just get called Kit Harrington there? Oh, if only I had his bank balance.
Done it again. And it says in your name right here.
I'll take it.
Yeah, we're not editing that. That's a compliment. Well,
keep that in. I've been away on a couple of golf days with his brother, interestingly. Oh. So.
I thought we were about to say him, and but we'll take guys.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. He only dabbles. He doesn't have a lot of time to play. So he can swing a club though, Kit Harrington. He's okay.
There are a few superstars. I think Tom Holland's kicking around this week as well. Some of Hollywood at Wentworth.
That's another great thing about the BMW PGA. On the Wednesday, the pro-am's absolutely unbelievable. And you get a bit of a different crowd for it. It's interesting being there. There is a real buzz around Wentworth on the Wednesday, and with the celebs and the celeb hunters coming out, as well as the golf fans. It's great.
Yes, Ben.
I once did a tweet about Guido Migliozzi, sort of. It was pithy about how you know, I don't think he's going to attract necessarily a whole. It won't sound good now, but it was a good tweet. And anyway, it was a joke about One Direction, and it was one of the biggest mistakes of my life, because for the next 3 days, I think I went viral in One Direction land, and I was getting tweets off sort of 15-year-olds saying, you know, we love golf. Guido's great. Leave him alone. That was one of my many mistakes.
So good. We'll keep that for the end when you're telling everyone why they should follow you on Twitter. We'll find out what it was. But back to Who Am I with not Kit Harrington, but Kit Alexander and Matt Cooper. We're going to open up with my pick for the week, who, clue number one, has earned just under 6 million euros so far in my career. I like to start with the earnings one. You can throw a guess out there if you... Oh, Matt Cooper, that was quite quick as well.
I'm going to, around about that amount, Matthew Southgate?
No, it's not Matthew Southgate. So we're going to clue two, which is, I am a proud owner of a Guinness World Record. Ben, was that a hand up there?
Well, I was going to say Alex Bjork after the first one, but Guinness World Record, Matt knows it, so I'm not going to hold him back anymore.
Aaron Rye?
No. Not sorry, it's not Aaron Rye.
So the Guinness World Record has got me thinking, but I didn't think he'd earned this much money, but I'm going to put it out there. Maybe if he has, fair play to him. Marcus Armitage?
No, again, this is good. Okay, we're going on to...
How many golfers have got Guinness World Records?
Well, I did a fair number of shoots doing this, so there's a fair few. we're going to number three. This could be the one. I won the 2015 US Amateur, beating Noah Goodwin 2-1 in the final. That's going to come over really well. And yeah, Matt, we just look.
I'm not sure this is right.
I've
Richie Ramsey.
Yeah, that's who I was thinking, but that seems
about
quite
10 years too late.
Yeah,
exactly. I was like, that's too recent.
It was actually 2016, not 15, but still no.
Oh, hold on. I think I know it. Oh, I think you've sold as a. No, I don't. He's earned more than that. No, forget it. Is this player playing in the BMW PGA?
Yes.
Fortinet?
Yes, yeah.
He's playing the BMW PGA. I'll forget it. I don't know.
Well, yeah, oh, well, the US Amateur is going to go Matt Fitzpatrick, but surely earned way more than $6 million.
Yeah. I'm now doubting about where I've got this money fact from.
It's Fitzy. And is that just DP World Tour earnings, maybe?
No, it's not. I'm sticking with it. It says that on both. So we're sticking. I'm still happy. I'm still happy with it. We're going on to four. I don't think we'll get this far. This is excellent stuff. Okay. Yeah. I love social media so much so that Golf Magazine described me as golf's first cult hero. Because my
hold on a minute.
Media.
Are you talking? Have you got the US Junior Amateur and it's Minwoo Lee?
Oh, what did I say? Did I not say? Would you have got it before then? No.
As soon as you said US Junior Amateur, I definitely would have got it, Ollie, and we can have no further questions on that.
No, but you got it anyway.
In fact, you knew that enough to question it when you got the clue that it was Minwoo. So I think I'd have backed you to have got that after US Junior Amateur. Yeah.
Luckily, you've still got the win on clue four, not clue three. Yeah, the word junior probably needed there. I thought, a good win in 2016 would have given it away. But you're well done, Ben. Back-to-back wins. This is becoming your absolute game. The last one was, you can find my sister over 30 places higher than me in the world of rankings on the women's side of the game, who, of course, is Minji Lee. But well done.
I need to know, Ollie, what's his world record?
Fastest hole as a team of four. It was in Spain.
Had
500 yards, and it was very wildly impressive stuff. And he was one of the guys there. And yeah, he is quite something on social media. I think he comments on absolutely every single post, and he loves it. So he's a great character. And he is who is going to win this week. And you've heard it from me, so you know that's true. Just remember, if you don't like gambling, but you do like a game, then the fantasy game is perfect for you on the DP World Tour website. You pick a team of six, and you've got plenty of names to choose between, throwing at the guys or completely ignore them. But I would take their advice. They're pretty good at what they do. You can join the league, beat friends and family, and have a great time. But now it's time we move on to the Fortinet Championship. Yeah, the BJ Tour is back at the Silverado Resort in Napa Valley, the wine region in California. And this is the 10th year in a row it has been at the course since its move there. And we're going to get straight into it because we know a little bit about this course, and we're going to try to do the podcast in under 4.5 hours. So, Kit, we're coming to you first because you've worked in this event a few times, you know a bit. What can you tell us about this golf course itself? What do we need to know? Because it did change not too long ago, and it's obviously changed name a few times. So just remind punters of what they should be looking at.
Yeah, it's the North Course at Silverado Resort. And actually, it's kind of weirdly not too dissimilar to Wentworth to an extent, in that it's tree-lined and it's a very classic course. It's got a lot of age to it. It was redesigned by Johnny Miller in 2011. He gave it a little bit of a tweak, some deeper bunkers and stuff. But essentially, it's pretty tight off the tee. Some good bunkering, a little bit of water coming into play, but massive greens is where it kind of differs to an extent from Wentworth. You've got the tree-lined look off the tee, but big, really undulating putting surfaces. So guys are going to hit a lot of greens, but have a lot of long putts. It's interesting. In recent years, the style of golf for that suited has kind of changed. And now you're getting players who are better off the tee playing well. They're obviously Max Homer's going for a three-peat. He's a very good driver of the ball. Stuart Sink, Brendan Steele's won there a couple of times as well. I think good drivers. It's tight, tree-lined off the course. Also, interestingly, as you get in California, it's sort of power-annua greens for the most part, which can be a bit of marmite for golfers. They tend to love it or hate it. And you get a lot of Californian guys that do well on power greens because that's what they're used to over there. We see that with Max Homer. So I think also you can kind of look and see who thrives on those types of greens and who doesn't, because it can be a real separator.
Yeah, I think driving the ball's massive here. And I think it's probably one of those courses where the driving the ball takes on a broader meaning, because you've got people like Cameron Champ Kevin Tway, who hit the ball a heck of a long way. But you've got others like Kevin Na, obviously lost out to Emiliano Grillo here, when, interestingly, both of them lost strokes on the greens. So it was a proper ball strikers week. Two bad putters in a playoff that Grillo went on to win. And Grillo's another fabulous driver of the ball if you take a more of a sort of blend of distance and accuracy, which is Max Homer as well. Like, he's long, but he's not super long, and he's more accurate than you know, some of the bigger hitters. Brendan Steele, I mean, he's made a career on the back of his driver, and obviously is a two-time winner. And I'll just throw a course correlation, and Brendan Steele's the most sort of vivid demonstration of it, because it's quite a strange one. But it's with TPC San Antonio's Oaks course in Texas. Obviously different grasses, different climate, different time of year and all that. But I do think both of them place a real premium on driving the ball well. And you see it through so many different champions, but also, you know, players who, like Stephen Bowditch, who won at the Oaks course and nearly won here. Kevin Tway has gone really well there. I think there are a lot of sort of lower ranked players who pop up at both golf courses that makes it a really interesting connection to me. And I think it's worth bearing in mind. But above all else, I was looking for people who drive the ball well.
Yeah, okay. And Matt, Max Homer is interesting here, because people always want to know what you're looking at. Ben's ticked that off, and Brendan Steele did the same thing. Interesting, because last year, he's obviously Ryder Cup. Last year, he wins this. The following week, President's Cups, goes 4-0. How important is it that he, do you think, has a good week? How much will that be playing on his mind as, you know, the Ryder Cup representation, I should even say, in the event this week?
Yeah, I think it'll be important, but I think it's more important that he just doesn't do absolutely terribly this week, and there's no reason to think that he will do, because he's just, a lot of the things we've just described here, the power on the greens in California, he's dynamite in that neck of the woods. I think if he had an absolutely terrible week, he might wonder what the heck's going on, given that he's thrived so often. But I think he's probably also reached that point in his life, as long as it's not the major championships, he kind of knows his game quite well. And I think he'll probably head off to Rome reasonably confident, pretty much whatever happens. I'm really taken by Ben's thoughts about San Antonio. It probably seems apt. Should I kick on with my first pick, Ollie? Does that make sense?
Please do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going with a fella who... It was actually a former Wentworth winner. So the fact that he's elected to play at Silverado. By the way, I always have to sing in my head Silverado to that Desperado song. Is that the Eagles? I think it might be the Eagles. I'll do my best not to break out into song and turn this into sort of hideous karaoke podcast. He's chosen to be in Silverado this week, which in itself is kind of tells you what he's thinking at the moment. He's another one who's just ticking along in form. He was 23rd in the Open, which is not too bad. He's been 9th in Detroit recently, 13th Twin Cities. Didn't make it to the playoffs, but which I think probably is exactly why he's where he is, and he's determined to shore up his PGA tour membership and prospects for this year. But I like the fact that he's been second at Torrey Pines. He was also second at Tahoe Mountain. Both of those got Poa Greens, are in California. I think there's a fair amount. I mean, Max Homer kind of makes it look like there's a greater sort of correlation between all of the California courses. But in actual fact, I think most people who people do well here and then do well in the events just after New Year in California. I think there is a bit of a link. And for what it's worth, four of Alex Noren's wins on the European Tour, DP World Tour, were actually on kind of Poa Greens, Cran, Le Golf and Celtic Manor. I don't think there's a great deal of similarity in them with Californian Poa, which are really quite tricky. But it's something else in his favour. And actually, ultimately, I just thought he has the potential to play really well this week. And he was 45-1, and I thought that was enough. And sometimes at the start of the year, I'm almost looking. Lots of people will be very popular because their form has been really, really good, and there's been a big break. Who could actually overperform for what their odds are for this week? And I think he's one of them.
And I think the Wentworth thing is quite interesting because, and Cron actually, because obviously Danny Willett should have won this last year. And is a champion at both of those courses. And Ben Ann played terrifically well as well. Obviously, a player we've mentioned already when talking about Wentworth. So I was waiting for Matt's big reveal as to who this was. I was sort of trying to work out who this player was, and it sort of the penny dropped at some stage that this is Alex Noren. And I definitely think he's one of those who's played better than a lot of people would think over the last sort of 2 years, actually. For mine, and these are words I've probably never uttered before, but I really fancy Bo Hostler this week. Part of the reason is that his best recent chance to win came at San Antonio, that course correlation I like. But I'd say that's probably the icing on the cake. I think the main thing I want to say about Bo Hostler is he reminds me a lot of Wyndham Clark this time last year. Now, I'm not sitting here telling you Bo Hostler's next year's US Open champion, not for a second. I think when we were talking about Wyndham Clark a year ago as a player ready to have the best year of his career, I think nobody expected it to be as good as it has been. But he looked like someone who, for whom the penny had dropped. And really, Bo Hostler has a lot of similarities in terms of his amateur pedigree, in terms of what he does well. Basically, he drives it well and he putts well. I think he's one of those who I'd be looking at as someone who can really take advantage of these weaker fall series events now. And no reason this couldn't be the one. He's been in the top 25 the last 3 years. And there was a line he said a couple of years ago when he was talking about how he was playing and stuff. And he was saying, my big problem is I just can't keep the ball out of the trees. And if you go through some of the numbers, basically he's played well here despite driving it poorly. And yet over the last 2 or 3 months, he's driven the ball to a really, really high standard, which is where he reminds me of Wyndham Clark, because that's exactly what Clark had started to do, real consistency off the tee. And I often think if you find that consistency off the tee, it can bleed into the rest of your game. Not that Bo Hostler needs any help with the putter. He's one of the best putters in this field. Some of the best tee-to-green numbers of his life in the St. Jude Championship when we saw him last. The big concern, like so many of these, is that we haven't seen him since. It's the nature of the calendar as it is now. But he is from California. He does know this course well. I think on that, I would happily give him the benefit of the doubt. So, yeah, he's about 28 to 33 to 1. But I just think it's an outstanding chance for a player like him to break through and be the latest Californian to win this after Brendan Steele, Max Homer, and Cameron Champ, who've won it, what, 5 times between them.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, my second pick is Taylor Montgomery, who was third here last year when he was bang in the middle of a period of really flush, superb golf. He was making a lot of top tens on the Corn Ferry Tour for fun, and then he had 8 top 15s in his first nine starts on the PGA Tour season last year. He sort of went a bit cool after that. I think probably he'd been hot for so long, there was a kind of inevitability to that. But he played well enough in that early spell to actually get himself into the start of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And actually closed the first of them with three good rounds, but it wasn't sufficient to get him through into the second one. I think he's a solid record on POA. He's also been 11th at Torrey Pines, in addition to that third at this course last year. I just think he's the sort of person, he's drifted the good side of 50s. He can get 55 to 1 with him still. And he's the sort of person that if he's shown a little bit more, I think he'd be a lot shorter. And the reset gives him the possibility of slotting back into that sort of form. And again, there's a bit of guesswork involved, but I'm kind of saying with this pick that there are people below him who are at shorter prices because they're in a bit of form, whereas I think his probably A game is better than some of theirs, so I'm happy to take a chance on him this week.
Okay, great. We're going to roll straight into Ben. We've got one more outright before Kit wants to, I know, bring up someone he's thinking about. So, Ben, who are you going to finish off with the fourth outright between the two of you?
Yeah, I guess a very similar case for a different Taylor here. Taylor Pendrith, I think it's a really good course for him. He made his debut as a PGA Tour rookie here 2 years ago, as many of his class would have done. He had played the PGA Tour before, but in terms of as a card holder, he played really well in the second round, made a nice move to the fringes of contention and did enough to suggest it was a good course for him. As I say, he was the leader in strokes gained off the tee. And it is a course where if you drive the ball as he does, you can do a lot of damage. A very similar formula, I suppose, to Cameron Champ when he won here. I mean, Pendrith hits the ball an absolute mile. Go back to last year, he was a bit disappointing, but don't forget he'd been picked, the sort of surprise pick, if you like, for the President's Cup, which was days away. So I can forgive him for allowing his mind to wander. He played really well at the President's Cup, actually, for little reward. Again, as with Hostler, we've got a nice little link back to San Antonio. He was second on the Oaks course on the Corn Ferry Tour a couple of summers ago. And I think, kind of stealing Matt's point, really, or copying it, his ceiling is a lot higher than most. I think if this field had taken part in an event the week after he finished sixth or fifth, wherever he was in the Barbasol, it'd be a 25-1 shot. And you're getting three times those odds because of a couple of missed cuts on courses like Sedgefield that probably don't fit his game quite so well. And after an undeniably disappointing year, it's a really good chance for him to reset and remind us all of the talent that did get him into that President's Cup team.
Perfect. Yeah,
I've got to bring up someone that we've not mentioned. So of all the 24 players heading to Rome, there's one man who is desperately in need of form more than any others. Of course, Justin Thomas, there was a little bit of controversy about the pick, or was there? Obviously, John Rahm, as you've mentioned, thought, well, yeah, of course he's going to be in the team. He's Justin Thomas. But he's not playing well. He's had one top 10 and six missed cuts going back to the Masters. Okay, tied 12th. Wyndham, when he was sort of a near chipping away from forcing his way into the FedEx Cup playoffs, ended up finishing 71st, you know, misses out on 1-2, potentially 3 weeks of work there, but hasn't teed it up since then. He needs form. Like, he desperately needs form. As good as your match play record is for Team USA, as good as you are in the team room, as much as you have an obvious pairing with Jordan Spieth, if you're playing badly, the Ryder Cup is not somewhere you find your form. So how massive is this week? And actually at a course where Justin Thomas does have a good record.
I'm going to throw to Matt for the most of this, but I'll just say quickly that if you are looking for a sign, then Silverado's been a great place for it for JT. You said he's got a good record, Kit. The last three times he's played here, 2015, 16 and 19, he finished in the top 10. Not only that, his very next start he won. I think two CIMB classics, as it was, and then the CJ Cup. So in terms of a pointer towards something really good on the horizon, it's been a good place for him. And if he were to finish eighth or ninth this week, then all of a sudden, from being the big Ryder Cup concern, he might return to his role as Captain America and be one of the key men for the USA. I don't think that is totally out of the realms of possibility. But as you've hinted, a lot depends on how he plays here.
Perfect. Well, there you go. So I knew someone would bring it up. I presumed it would be Ben. Matt, anything else on Justin Thomas at all at the top of the market?
I'm not so sure there is on me. I think you've covered JT there. I'll just throw one other name in here. And he's the, what you could call like the Max Homer of 2010 to 2014, which is Jimmy Walker. He was dynamite on power in California. I think he had 10 top 10s in 12 starts at one point. He won at Pebble Beach. He won at Cordova Valley. He's just very, very good. He was 25th in this event last year, 13th at Torrey Pines. He had a funny little spell in the middle of the year. He led by three shots at Harbortown in the middle of the year, threatened a little bit in Mexico and a couple of times after. Mm-hmm. If he's going to come back to anything, it could be this week. I don't really expect him to win, but he's 200-1 and I couldn't resist it.
I love that. As he's specific times of Max Homer's between different times of years in the 2010 region might become another new segment. But great, plenty of names thrown out there. And then some were an hour ago. So we're going to do a quick recap before we say goodbye to our fantastic guests.
Time now to recap all of those picks, and we're going to start with Matt Cooper's from the two events. He has got Tom Kim 25-1 at the BMW PGA Championship and Tristan Lawrence at 150-1, and some extra bets he liked the look of were Billy Horschel 35-1, Shubhankar Sharma 150-1, and the Belgian Thomas Dietrich at 50-1. And then in the Fortinet Championship, it was Alex Noren at 45-1 and Taylor Montgomery at 55-1. And one extra bonus we gave was Jimmy Walker at a massive 200-1. Then looking at Ben Coley at Wentworth, it was 4 points win only at 8-1 with John Rahm, followed up by Matt Fitzpatrick at 16-1 with a few extra bets of Francesco Molinari at 140-1, his compatriot Guido Migliozzi at 100-1 and Victor Perez 80-1. And then the PGA Tour, it was Bo Hostler, his big fancy at 33-1 and another Taylor Pendrith rounding it off at 70-1 in the Fortinet Championship.
Yes, that's right. Plenty of names there. Fingers crossed we get a winner on the podcast this week. We've been very close. And Ben talks about in crossbars. It could be us who's sitting at the bottom of the bar and it goes in this week. A massive thank you to Ben, Matt and Kit Alexander for their insights this week. Ben's on Twitter at Ben Coley. golf. Thank you, Ben. And we look forward to your next hilarious tweet about a boy band that gets you loads of abuse. Any tips for who it could be? Or just going to leave it there?
I don't know the names of any boy bands currently, Ollie, so thank you for asking that question.
Boys Life are really good.
Boys Life, very solid outfit, yeah. What were they called? O-Town, there you go. That's the sort of era I'm talking about. We've got loads of good stuff on Sporting Life in the next few weeks, including Matt's Solheim Cup guide before I take over for the Ryder Cup. So hopefully people will pop along and read that, but I'll be back on the podcast as well in the coming weeks, and I look forward to it.
Yes, lovely. We look forward to having you, and at Matt Cooper Golf, you as well, and that Solheim preview. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I've got a big month coming up because I'm out to Spain for the Solheim Cup, then across to Rome for the Ryder Cup, and then a couple of weeks around the countryside of Italy. So it's my grand tour that's coming up, and I think I will be appearing for the Ryder Cup on the podcast, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Great. Yes, you are. I'm our ladies golf expert, and just European team golf, if it's going on, Matt Cooper's nearby with some anecdotes, I'm sure, which you look forward to. And finally, Kit on the course as well. Thank you, Kit. Where are you off to?
Actually jetting off to Germany to Winston Golf for the Seniors Open on the Legends Tour tomorrow. So I'll be flying out there and then keeping an eye on Wentworth from there. And then I'm lead commentator at the French Open next week. So looking forward to that. We've got guys like Billy Horschel and Tom Kim continuing to play. And obviously the week before the Ryder Cup and during the Solheim Cup as well. So while I'm out in Paris.
Beautiful. Yeah, it'll be a real flavour there at the Kazoo Open to France at the Golf National, given the scenes in 2018. But fantastic to have you all. Thank you very much. Enjoy all your travels. And until then, guys, enjoy the golf. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. Good luck with your picks. Let us know how you go. Send the guys lots of love when they land your winner. And we will see you next time on The Tips.